Nina's question is about parami, which she's just written the article about. She says that the parami of samatha knows akusala as akusala and kusala as kusala. But what about the parami of vipassana? She says, I still find it difficult. It knows akusala and kusala as only anama, not self. But it also knows this is kusala, not akusala. Can that be at the same time? Can it know at the same time that it is nama and that it is kusala?
That's when right understanding with right awareness, right understanding understands the characteristic which is kusala as not self, only a conditioned reality.
If that characteristic appears.
Mm-hmm.
If the characteristic of nama-ness appears, then that is the characteristic of knowing.
What nama? Kusala nama or akusala nama? Because akusala is also nama.
Is it a different level of panya? Do you think that knows nama?
Samatha does not understand the characteristic which appears as a conditioned reality, not self.
If we say that the understanding knows the citta as kusala nama, then it's two things that it's knowing.
It sounds like two things, because one thing that one has to say that this is kusala nama. But the characteristic of kusala nama is different from the characteristic of akusala nama.
I see.
We don't have to say that this is nama and this is kusala nama. The nama is nama, it appears as nama, and when it's kusala nama, at that moment right understanding understands kusala nama which appears. How can it understand the akusala nama which does not appear at that moment?
Isn't it easy to confuse kusala with akusala?
When there is no direct awareness and not the direct understanding, it can be confused. Because it's only thinking about the story of kusala nama and akusala nama. For example, at this moment, one knows about the stories of kusala namas and akusala namas and vipaka namas and kriya namas. But is there any understanding of the characteristic which is kusala, which is different from akusala? Can one say that there must be kusala moments only now, no akusala at all? Or can one say that there is only akusala namas, no kusala namas now? But one cannot tell what moment is kusala and what moment is akusala if there is no awareness of realities which appear.
Would it be true to say that understanding as it develops knows the difference between nama and rupa, and later it knows the difference between kusala and akusala?
By that way it sounds like there is no direct awareness of kusala nama and akusala nama. It's only remembering about the story of kusala and akusala.
I mean in the way that understanding doesn't see impermanence. At the first, that's a higher level of jnana than knowing nama from rupa.
That's why it knows the characteristic of kusala nama as kusala nama and akusala nama as akusala nama.
From the beginning, as it were.
On the process of developing.
Mm-hmm. Well, at which stage of the process?
Do we have to say precisely, or it develops? What moment one knows how to read and write? What exact moment? One studies until one learns. It's like when there is understanding of seeing that it's a reality which experiences visual object, different from hearing, which experiences sound. Do we have to say that seeing is different from hearing? Like akusala is different from kusala. When there's awareness of kusala, it's not moment of being aware of akusala. As when there is awareness of seeing, it's not the moment of being aware of hearing.
Just like that, is it?
Mm-hmm. The characteristic of the object is different. When lopa is object, it's different from when dosa is object. Very much, certainly. If there is no awareness, there cannot be right understanding of reality which appears. And whenever awareness is aware, it's different from moment when there is no awareness.
Is developed by mere thinking about reality.
That is not the development of Satipatthana, because that is only the level of thinking.
There might be somebody to start to concentrate on certain objects. The idea that I concentrate on object or directly for the object, the characteristic of the reality might be known.
By the self, not by awareness. Because there is no understanding of sati as anatta, so it must be atta, which directs attention to such and such object.
Anatta cannot direct attention to an object.
Like seeing now is anatta, purely anatta.
There cannot be direction to that object without wrong understanding.
When it's wrong understanding, it takes that moment for a possibility to direct. No understanding of all dhammas are anatta, all. No exception, even nibbana is anatta. Why not just be aware, or let awareness be aware by itself? Why not?
That's because it doesn't.
So the self wants. That's why one can see that it's very difficult to eradicate the idea of self by the self. No way. Right understanding is patient, because it's right understanding. It doesn't have wrong view of self to direct attention to this or that object.
In the course of developing of Satipatthana, the practice of sati be known more and more precisely.
When right understanding develops, not soon. It takes time, quite a long time. But if one is patient with right understanding can grow. There is no hindrance for its growing. But if one wants it to grow so soon, wrong understanding grows unknowingly, pushing one to this or that practice. When it's not the direct awareness of seeing of this moment, or hearing of this moment, or thinking of this moment, it cannot be samasati. Because it does not know the conditioned reality which appears as it is at this moment. And if one still wants to direct one's attention to other objects, there will be no possibility to have right understanding of seeing, hearing in daily life.
Can you say that we cannot be directed? I'm not sure how well I understand the meaning of directed. Can we say about samatha, can it be directed or not?
It's conditioned, but since there is no understanding of the anattaness of sati, so one thinks that one directs attention or concentration to such object.
You mean even when sati is being developed correctly at some moments, that there are other moments where one thinks one is directing it, but really that's not possible because it must arise by conditions.
Sati is sopana dhamma, and right understanding is sopana dhamma. So it must be kusala citta, which is calm, and calmness develops when there is conditions for its growth. So it's not concentration on a certain object with desire.
Is it from the direction of concentration?
There's understanding of the conditions of calmness. There must be right understanding of samatha and right awareness at level of samatha, which understands that kusala citta is calm and akusala citta is not calm. So there must be the understanding of the calmness of citta and the hindrances, which are those akusala cittas. It's not thinking about the calmness of kusala citta, but it's the awareness of the characteristic which is calm, which is kusala. So that one knows the difference between kusala citta and akusala citta. One can say that now there is kusala citta, but it's not awareness at all of the kusala citta.
Now, but there is no awareness of it.
Of the characteristic which is kusala.
Is that the same as the characteristic of calmness that you mentioned?
Kusala citta is calm,
yes,
because there is no lobha, dosa, moha, no akusala cetasikas at all at that moment.
So is calmness the characteristic of kusala citta?
Certainly.
B or A?
No matter it's dana, sila, when there is no lobha, no dosa, no moha, citta must be calm. So it's not the moment when there is no understanding of anything. Like after seeing, and when citta is not kusala, it must be akusala. But avicca cannot know avicca. Moha cannot know moha. But right understanding knows that at that moment it's not calm. It is akusala citta. That's why when it's calm, there must be panya and awareness.
Okay.
and sati at level of samatha.
Suppose in our daily life the calmness never appears, but as far as we can see there is only restlessness and so forth. Does that indicate that there has been no awareness at all of the characteristic of calmness?
No awareness of the characteristic, but there is a level of awareness which has right understanding of the story, the thinking, right thinking.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose at moments when we are doing something that involves kusala, for example, at the time of giving something or listening to Dhamma or whatever, those moments don't appear to have any different characteristic than ordinary moments in our life.
Right. Because of?
Well, I would think because lack of awareness.
Right. Mm-hmm. Of the characteristic of reality.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's why even kusala citta is calm for sure, but it does not grow because there is no awareness and no right understanding of the calmness of kusala citta.
Why is there no such awareness?
No understanding of the development of samatha. One is taught to concentrate, but one is not taught to understand the characteristic which is calmness, when there is no lobha, no dosa, no moha. So in one's life, one can notice that even at moment of kusala, like dana, kusala citta arises so short and not as many as a kusala. One is attached immediately to the object which is given when it's nice, pleasant object. But the more one understands the characteristic of calmness, even while there is kusala deeds like dana, one can notice the characteristic of calmness more and more. And there are conditions for more calmness. Even at moment of dana, or show respect to the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha.
At time of, say, performing dana, it would seem to me that there are still more akusala cittas than kusala.
Usually.
To say no, the characteristic of calmness at that moment, the chances are that it's the akusala cittas that will appear,
mm-hmm.
not the calmness.
One is aware completely by seeing the object which is given, or the person, the receiver, or many things appearing through sense doors. But dana can be jaganasati only when there's awareness and right understanding of the calmness moment.
Right, if there were no understanding of that calmness at the time of the dana, then one couldn't recollect it.
No. Mm-hmm. One will be attached to the result of one's deeds, one's kusala. One enjoy one's kusala. It's my kusala. Then it's not karma anymore because it's my kusala.
Seems to me that one can have some understanding of things like visible objects and sound and seeing and hearing, but it's much more difficult to know, for example, moments of kusala from moments of akusala.
Later, one will know.
When?
Who can tell? But begins. Let's begin. Everything has beginning. Without beginning, there is no end.
It's a bit confusing because we are told that kusala is so different from akusala, the very opposite,
mm-hmm.
and yet...
One can know when there is the awareness of calmness of kusala, and then one can see that akusala is not calm at all. Even its pleasant feeling is not calm.
Some difference between, for example, these moments of discussing the one in my life, you said there's kusala now, I have awareness of it, but there may not be a clear understanding. But we can still see that this is a little bit different from other times in our lives. There is some noticeable difference.
Beginning when there is awareness, one knows that awareness is different from unawareness. And then later on, one knows that at moment of awareness, it's calm, it knows, it studies, it understands. Different from moment when there is no awareness, no understanding of reality which appears. But one thinks of other calmness, not at moment when there is awareness, but awareness itself is calm. One doesn't have to have the other type of calmness when there is awareness at that moment.
If I'm listening to the Dhamma with some sincerity, then it's not the same as thinking about other things all the time. You shouldn't get calm and being upset by what you hear and what you see. If we had that abhisala now, it would be difficult to appreciate the meaning of what being
I think there's a difference between the moments at times like this, for example, and other parts of our daily life. The difference is not so distinct as to be able to say, well, these moments are dusala and other moments are not. But it would seem that there are more dusala moments now than at other times.
Could you say that you could go and say for the time? Now and at other times?
Not in the sense that there is absence of restlessness.
No.
Not in the sense that there is less restlessness than at other times.
No.
When there is awareness of akusala, for example, and in the day there are more kusala moments than kusala moments, and there are less awareness than awareness in a day, it indicates that the calmness cannot appear easily because there are more akusala as objects. It takes time to notice the calmness of kusala moments. But one begins to understand more of the characteristic of calmness, that it's different from concentration.
So one means that though one has some calmness, even though there may be significantly more than at other times, maybe there's just sometimes conditions for moha and one cannot notice it.
Like someone who's kind, that person can have many moments of kusala without awareness and understanding of calmness. So calmness cannot grow. So it cannot appear as calmness.
Even though another person may be able to see that that person is calm,
right,
but he himself doesn't realize.
That's why the development of samatha and vipassana can be done only with awareness, sati and sampajanya. Without sati and sampajanya, samatha cannot develop. And by sati sampajanya, right understanding can see the difference between the calmness, which is kusala, and akusala, which is not calm. And the difference between calmness and concentration.
That's the Sampajanya I heard you read on Sutta on a page 2 days ago. Conditioned by Yoniso Manasikara, when we hear Dhamma, if we listen and there is not the Yoniso Manasikara, they are not conditioned for Sati Sampajanya.
It can be only hearing, no considering at all. So
maybe hearing and thinking we understand, but not really.
Understand the story.
Thinking we understand more than we do. Hearing it, because we're used to the words, we hear them very often, but there's still not the real necessary consideration.
For example, the development of samatha, it cannot be done if there is no understanding of the difference between calmness and concentration.
Yes, I was just going to ask about that. What is that difference?
Concentration can be nitya samadhi when it arises with akusala citta. And calmness cannot be akusala because it arises with kusala or sopana citta.
I must not quite have it properly, because I thought that knowing the difference between right concentration and wrong concentration would be like knowing the difference between calmness and restlessness.
Mm-hmm.
But then you say there's a difference between calmness and concentration.
Because
in addition to knowing calmness from restlessness, or same thing.
Same thing. Mm-hmm. Because when it's only concentration, no calmness, it has to be akusala.
And so there's no difference between calmness and right concentration.
No. But the characteristic of calmness is not the characteristic of concentration. But when calmness grows, right concentration appears.
Yeah.
Because of the growth of calmness.
But it has its own characteristic.
Mm-hmm.
Concentration, even when it's wrong, is like a steady thing. And so we may think, oh, this is calmness because
right.
It's steady.
Right.
Or strong.
Mm-hmm. But it's not calmness at all.
Without the understanding, one can't see the different kinds of steadiness or the different kinds of strength.
One will take the wrong concentration for right concentration and takes it for calmness when it's not.
So we'd be very pleased to see our concentration without considering what kind of concentration.
Right. And when there is attachment to that moment, one enjoys it, one thinks that it's calm.
Mm.
And I think that most people still are attached to concentration. Because the mind is steady on one object and one is satisfied because one likes it to be that way.
One is attached to calm.
No calmness to be attached to.
One is attached to the idea of being calm.
Because attachment is akusala. It has its object. And right understanding has its own object, which is not the same object of attachment. Sitting kusala or akusala. Understanding of realities which appear of Dhamma is kusala. It can be satta and chanda.
Some confidence is very important.
Seeing the value of right understanding of realities of Dhamma. In order to have more kusala, more development of kusala, in order to eradicate a kusala.
When one knows that one has some wish or desire, intentions to know the reality, and that it is not the way. And that can what can one do?
Being aware
of what?
Of desire, yeah. Of that moment as it is, of anything. Let anything be object of awareness. Don't think that, oh, it's not the right object, because awareness can be aware of any object. If there is no awareness of desire, it's impossible to understand desire as only a conditioned reality. Like thinking, if there is no awareness of thinking, whenever there is thinking, it's I who thinks. But thinking is conditioned. And if there is no understanding of desire, desire is there, always there.
Who is bad? These are just concepts?
Realities.
Realities.
Mm-hmm.
Example?
Loba is real or unreal?
Real.
Do we have to say that it's bad? When it's bad in itself.
Loba is greed.
Mm-hmm. Good or bad?
Depends on the conditions of the individual. Really. I mean, in our society, a Western society, we're constantly told to grab things, have things. But you know, wealth is good, keep up with the Joneses, capitalism is the way to make capitalism grow. So in that case, one could consider it.
If there is no desire, can there be unsatisfactoriness? Is it good to have unsatisfactoriness?
One would like to be without it.
But one wants to have desire.
Yes. Yes.
So one just wants the cause, but one doesn't want the result. One cannot get rid of the result as long as one has the cause. So there must be unsatisfactoriness.
Yes. Unsatisfactoriness, yes.
When there is loba. Mm.
And you consider unsatisfactoriness bad.
Is it good?
I don't know. Not in that way, I don't mean that.
So you like?
No.
It doesn't matter really whether you call it bad or not. But if you don't know that it's been gotten rid of, you never get rid of it. And usually
what you say is it doesn't matter if you consider bad or not.
No, I'm saying it doesn't matter if you stick that label bad on it, but you must realize
label on it.
You must realize it's been gotten rid of.
Did you say label?
Well, loba is another label. It's a name.
Yeah.
You don't have to call loba loba, it's still loba. And it still has its result, which is brings unhappiness, causes unsatisfactoriness. If you don't want the unsatisfactoriness, then you have to look at the cause, which is loba, and get rid of it. Usually things that we want to get rid of we call bad. Don't you? Not good if you want to get rid of them. If you don't care whether you have it or not, or whether you get rid of it or not, you don't have to think of it or understand it as being good or bad or useful or useless or dangerous or what. You can just go on having it and more of it, because not knowing the danger of it will be a condition for it to just keep going.
Maybe it's because under certain circumstances, bad and good can be concepts, but then when looking at things like loba and having some understanding, then it doesn't have concept. Like someone, you know, the man on the white horse in the white outfit who goes around killing all all the bad men with black suits on and not realizing his killing is just as bad as what theirs is. And we label that he's the good man. So would that not be a concept there? In that particular type of labeling, good, he is the good man, they are the bad men, which is so much in our thinking. Is that not a concept then?
No, you're not talking about realities anymore, so it's...
Yes, but no, I'm talking about the words. And
you're talking about realities here. Mm-hmm. Or that's the most useful thing to talk about. Mm-hmm. Because you can, and also you can say that something's good is bad. And something bad is good, like thinking that electricity is glistening.
Right.
With this wrong understanding.
Sweet think that Lopa is good, can we change the characteristic of Lopa? So it doesn't depend on our concept.
When there's experiencing of Lopa, is the experiencing of Lopa or, I mean, like, is the experiencing that it is bad?
That characteristic, which is greed, good, greed.
Isn't it saying, no, but if it's saying that the moment of experiencing greed would be one moment.
It's not the same moment of experiencing non-greed.
Often when you talk about different realities, for example, color, or visible object, you might say, knowing it as it is means understanding that it appears only through the eye.
It's a reality which can appear only through eyes.
Yes. In one way, we can appreciate what we mean. Yet, in theory, we know also that it appears through mind or so. When we know it can appear through two, it not can but must or does appear through both.
Only the impression, not the seeing, which sees, not the sampaticcana, which experiences. Like in a dream, does it appear? Yes, but one dreams about it.
Yes, but it's different from seeing.
Mm-hmm. But it appears like the same.
Yes.
When I was reading about the paramis mean...
Could you help me, please?
It's usually translated as perfection.
Perfection.
I don't know the derivation.
From parama, parama means utmost or
parama. So,
utmost,
or perhaps parama is another suggestion. Utmost seems
parami.
Factors of accomplishment.
Factors of accomplishment. In the arahat, these factors are developed.
The moment of enlightenment, no matter what stage, needs parami.
Mm.
Without parami, it's impossible to have that moment of enlightenment.
Thank you. To what level, to what extent are they developed by the arahat?
To the extent that there is no more latent tendencies, all kinds of latent tendencies. Can it be understood if we use the term factors of accomplishment? Or perfection?
Sorry.
Or factors of perfection, enlightenment, accomplishment?
I'm not sure because I never heard. Though translation before.
You mean the word perfection? Or
no, perfection of accomplishment. I haven't heard before.
I wonder about using perfections, because then when we read that this perfection has to be developed, it suggests that it has to be, yes,
perfect.
But in fact, it's only developed halfway.
Until it's perfect. Metta, this moment, will lead to the perfect of metta at level of sotapanna, sikata agami, and agami.
So what did you mean talking about pathway?
I mean that each of these factors, for example, metta is developed to the level necessary at time of the different stages of enlightenment, but not to the level that, for example, the Buddha developed them. He developed them to the level of perfection, but only he developed them perfectly.
So you mean that perfection is solely for Buddha?
Perfection means cannot be improved any further, cannot be developed any further.
What about perfection at level of sotapanna? No perfect. No perfect.
The Paramitas have this idea of being great. This word, like, suggesting utmost or beyond.
Literally, it means the Dhamma which helps one to reach the goal, the bank, or the other side of the samsara.
That's of getting beyond, maybe.
Yes, that's the meaning maybe. Of parami.
Should one strive for attaining the parahatship, fulfill all these environments?
What about sotapanna? Sotapanna also needs parami in order to become sotapanna. If one hasn't attained sotapannaship, one cannot be arahata. But when one has become sotapanna, one will be an arahata for sure.
And not just working for the family without fulfilling the environment, and this one attaining sotapannaship.
When there's right understanding of reality is not self, there are more conditions for sovana realities to arise. Without the idea of self, or I would like to have more kusala. When one clings to kusala, that is not parami.
Some of the paramis sound or maybe unfamiliar to us, like, for example, abhidhana parami. Because when we look at the 37 factors of enlightenment, if we think now these are all necessary for to become sotapanna, so which of these factors can we call adhikana parami?
At moment of awareness, it's more than just adhidhana, because it's the actual development of parami.
So adhikana is difficult to pinpoint.
When sees the value of the development of satipatthana, and one is not led by desire to other practice, then it indicates that adhidhana is firm, steady.
Is it a degree of understanding?
Yes. And one is not impatient to develop right understanding of seeing, hearing, and all realities which are conditioned.
I'm not clear to what extent one should have the aim to develop the different factors. For example, like Buddha, his
strong purpose was to develop these paramis to the fullest extent, but we know that it took him many, many lifetimes to do that, and that he couldn't become enlightened until he had perfected them. So this is like setting oneself a goal that must be attained before enlightenment could be reached. So to what extent does one have the aim or purpose of developing the paramis?
In this life, sometimes we think that we would be kind, having kindness to as many people as we can.
Yeah.
Is that not parami?
The intention?
Mm-hmm. Resolution. To develop metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha.
Yes, it would be.
To give to the poor when it's favorable time.
Yes.
To help anyone who needs help.
To look for opportunities for kusala.
It's one's intention to develop kusala. Together with the development of satipatthana, it doesn't mean that I will be angry and I will develop satipatthana. I will not be kind, but I will develop satipatthana. I will envy, but I will develop satipatthana. One does have such idea when one develops satipatthana. One thinks more about other kinds of kusala. And they are parami. Without telling or saying that they are parami, but they are.
So there's no need to make a special resolution or take a vow or something to...
If one does not develop the dipatthana, well, it's just a moment. A vow is just a moment. And one forgets.
What about, this is not directly related, but when one reads about the different paramis such as metta and resolution and so forth, so some of them appeal, or one is inspired more by some form, some kinds of the factors than others. Like the parami of giving, for example, or kindness to other people.
And then what about sila? When one sees the value of dana, one also sees the value of sila and other parami.
They are not all equally inspiring, though. One doesn't think of them all. One thinks of
one,
but doesn't
time
think of the
enough.
Other.
Maybe it's just because everybody's different. Yeah.
But one sees the values of all.
Does it show anything about one's accumulation, do you think?
But still, one sees the value of all.
You may not be very inspired by Sila, but you see the value.
What about if one thinks of anatta more than anicca or
yes,
dukkha?
Yes, but is there any value of dana without sila? Give and kill.
My question? Is there any value of dana without sila?
Give everything and then kill.
One can see the value. One may not be as resolved about one or the other. One may be
but
more determined.
But when it's part of me, one sees all develops or when it's parami. Because one develops a dipatthana, so one sees the danger of all akusala, and one sees the advantages of all kusala.
One understands some better than others. At different stages in development, because of one's accumulation, now one understands this one better and now this one.
As they are, but one develops all parami. For example, one sees the value of satipatthana, but it doesn't mean that one will not give and one will not observe sila. Which one inspires you most?
I can't remember them all. I have to look at the list.
Viriya or Kanti or Nekha?
Kanti is one. There were two or three that more than the others. And Viriya, for example, less than the others. Satya. Satya.
But when there is Kanti, there is Viriya.
So one doesn't have to think about Viriya.
Whenever there is awareness and sight, Viriya is there.
Is it true to say that if our goal is the development of awareness, then the paramis will develop by themselves?
Mm-hmm. More and more. Gradually, little by little, mm-hmm. until it's perfect.
Kind of, they'll develop automatically as it were along with
you. Mm-hmm. With right understanding. Mm-hmm. Right understanding understands what's right and what's wrong, and it eliminates wrong reality. Naturally.
But it's still useful to study the paramis.
In order to have more understanding. Because not all kusala is parami. If one doesn't understand the development of satipatthana, all kusalas are not parami. The goal is not to eradicate defilements. The goal is not the development of right understanding of realities. One is attached to the result of kusala, and that is not the goal, so it cannot be parami.
In line with the meaning, the fact that it's getting beyond, because if it's not for that purpose, it's not getting beyond or getting the meaning.
Getting on, but not getting beyond.
Because we can ask many people who give, they just give. They don't want to eradicate the akusala at all. They don't want to have more understanding of reality.
So how does giving get one beyond?
By seeing that it's conditioned, not self.
So whether one gives or not, one can still see what appears is conditioned.
And the more understanding develops, the more kusala. All kinds of kusala grow.
But is giving really so important for getting beyond?
All parami. Because if one cannot even give the material things, how can one give up one's attachment to self?
They seem different somehow.
What?
Giving material things and giving up one's attachment to self.
Mm-hmm. But if one cannot give material things, yet how can one give up the idea of self? Because it's deeply rooted.
By developing understanding, one can give up the idea of self.
And then one has less clinging to material things.
sees more the value of giving an attitude.
What can be given easier, the material things or eyes and parts of the body?
But it seems the difference between giving up something as you begin to understand the value of giving it up and giving things as a kind of a practice, just like to say, well, to develop a habit. If one sees the value in something with understanding, then one is able to do it. But if one is giving as a matter of practice because giving is supposed to lead one to enlightenment.
No, that is not parami. Giving is parami when there is right understanding that giving is conditioned, not self who gives.
But we don't have that understanding.
So it's not parami for anyone who doesn't have understanding.
But still, giving is not to be discouraged. Just because one doesn't have a level of
it produces results like being reborn in heaven.
Or maybe can you say that it produces results like hearing dhamma or something like that, something more useful than no, I mean can you say the result might be more useful than just present birth, but the chance to hear dhamma also?
If one doesn't have the understanding of the development of right understanding, one does not want to hear dhamma.
But if one wants to hear dhamma,
it means that one wants to develop right understanding.
But sometimes one might want to, but no chance.
Then?
Well, the chance must come as a result of Kusala Kamma.
You mean that one will give because one wants to be reborn in heaven in order to hear Dhamma?
Possibly, or just when you mentioned that the result of Kusala was present rebirth, I was thinking that also Dana and Siva can produce results like hearing Dhamma?
It's like being born in this human being world. Not many people would like to hear Dhamma. They'd like to have pleasant objects. That's all. So when they give, they just want something like pleasant objects.
And not so they give just pleasant objects.
Yes.
If one gives with the understanding of the value of hearing Dhamma, then such results may come.
One knows that Kusala Kamma would produce Kusala Vipaka.
Appropriate to the level of the Kusala.
Because too much you say about giving with right understanding, giving is at the level of dharma. If it's accompanied with right understanding, that giving is also conditioning, not so. The same thing applies to all sila?
Yes.
It's only
all ten parami.
Right. The awareness of sila itself is conditioned. It cannot be directed by itself.
It depends on the purpose of observing sila and the purpose of giving dana. If one knows that without parami, one cannot attain enlightenment, that is right understanding that one should develop right understanding together with all types of kusala. Has not arrived each option sila without any awareness of them. And the life is to develop the vipatthana and active. If it was, it was part of this. Intention is conditioned. That's why when there's right understanding. And one can see the anattaness of each moment. Even there is intention to give, there cannot be any giving. Or sometimes there is giving without the preceding intention.
can one lose the idea of self by surrender to a master, to a devotion and surrender? Can one lose the idea of self?
Can one lose the idea of self?
Can one lose Atma by just becoming completely surrendered, completely
yes.
devoted?
But at that moment, who surrenders?
It's not one moment. I mean, surrender
yes.
is not a moment, it's a lifetime.
Surrendering cannot eradicate defilement. Right understanding, only right understanding can.
When you surrender to someone like the Buddha?
No.
What do you mean by surrendering?
Like what nuns or monks, people do in the West, God or Jesus?
Well,
you
mean helping?
Devoting their whole life to that person.
If you mean your thought to the Master's will, if you mean your will to the Master's will,
don't you have to make, mustn't there be some act or moment of, or declaration of devotion?
There's a moment, first moment, but that's when you just start.
But does it continue at all moments, or does one have to keep reaffirming? You mean once you say I devote myself to the Master, then forever after one continues to be as devoted? One doesn't get distracted from one's presence at all?
If one got distracted, then it would not be true devotion. How would this be accomplished? How would this certain surrender which would never be
how would
it
be accomplished?
Well, what I'm thinking, the idea of losing self is, in total surrender, you have no more your own will or your own desire or your own. Everything the Master does and acts.
Isn't that an ideal that can't be achieved? If one says, I sincerely devote myself utterly and entirely for the rest of my life, to every living moment of it, and so on, to the Master, and then the next moment one experiences something for one of the sense doors, that that's what I'm saying, that it cannot be, there cannot be such a thing as true devotion, because when one has the attachment to all the different objects in life, but they're going to be distracted, just as they do now.
Well, one can read in history about some people who did have true devotion.
Every moment?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have an example of it.
What did the Buddha teach the devotee to develop, to practice, or to do, or to follow?
Well, I don't know, did the Buddha teach devotion?
Yes, certainly, yes.
Devotion to what?
His teachings. Understand what he taught. Develop what he taught.
Developing right understanding.
Yes.
There may be people not intellectually inclined.
So it's not devotion then?
No, devotion is a thing of the heart. For example, a mother can be totally devoted to a child.
And what does she do? What does she do? Yes. So if we follow the teaching, everything, developing kusala, awareness and right understanding, not just devote without any development at all.
The thing I was interested in is that true right development and right understanding will lead to our actions. But there may be people not inclined in an intellectual direction, who may be very inclined in an emotional direction, very devotedly inclined. For example, well, in my Christianity, there are examples of people, I think of St. Francis of Assisi, who is very devotional.
Can you devote yourself to one person like this?
Well, I'm not a very devotional person.
Yes, but it seems to me that the solution in one's life is to find what's going to free themselves, not what frees someone else. And if you can't find devotion in someone, if that is the way to achieve something, and if you can't do it, then it seems that it's not much worth it. Even thinking about it.
But does the master say there's any other way except to develop right understanding? Because it's the will of the master that we learn to be more mindful at this moment to understand it, then a truly devoted person can do more else. But that is that you have to follow the will of the master. And when the master says this is the only way, then you have to be inclined in that direction to do his will. If you're not, then you can't be devoted, because you won't be following his will, which is to know this moment.
But would a perfect master, being perfect, looking at the disciple, and seeing he is not intellectually inclined, say the only thing for you to develop that is would the master?
No, but he would say, if there's only one way, he wouldn't say that there are two ways or many ways. And if that man is not capable yet of appreciating the way, then the Buddha might speak more about seeing them, maybe? Because that person may not be able to understand the deepest level of Dhamma, I don't know.
I'm interested in the labelling of development of understanding as intellectual, because you call it intellectual, or you say that a person who is not intellectually inclined wouldn't be interested in developing understanding of reality.
Well, the study of Dhamma is a very deep study.
But the beginning of awareness of realities is hardly an intellectual subject if one is trying to understand more about the present moment, for example. Anyone can see the value of that without being an intellectual. One can begin without being an intellectual.